being deferred tonight with some information being brought back by the health insurance consultants and the human services director, and we can take that up either at the beginning of the meeting or at the end of the meeting. Our regular agenda here, as you see, is library, which I don't think will take too long, so I think I'll call upon the library director first. Public Works and Human Services are scheduled next. The issue of health insurance and wage increases probably will take some time. So I'd like to get your input on, if you'd like to do that, one of these three items: Public Works, Human Services, wages, health insurance, one of them tomorrow night instead of tonight. To do them all tonight, we are scheduled tomorrow. And the agenda, I think, is pretty light with budget finalization and the budget resolution. So I've looked at the budget resolution, and it doesn't really contain a lot of any controversial things, I think. So
I think really we have to go with the schedule because the people are already here that are for those departments, and I don't think we want to do that. So if we're here later, we're here later. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I agree. We should go with what the
people are here now. We can't sell them, so come back tomorrow night. I mean, that day, right? I think we can go ahead with the agenda as it is.
That means bumping the health insurance to tomorrow. Is that what you're trying?
Well, I wasn't. I was just suggesting that we do that and go with library, public works, human services tonight, so that we're fresh tomorrow to talk about the health insurance, wages.
Oh, okay.
I agree.
As opposed to, you know, doing it at 10 o'clock or something.
Yeah, I agree.
Take it up tonight.
I would disagree with that because we paid a consultant to come here. So I don't think we should put that off. As a matter of fact, I think we should just let library go and then deal with that.
I think I understand it's a contract fee to be paid regardless, correct? Whether it's tonight, tomorrow night, and the next night, it's still the same fee. So somebody's going to be inconvenienced. My thought is let's inconvenience that and come back tomorrow night and do that.
I agree.
I don't agree.
I actually agree with Supervisor Getz that they're here, library first, then revisit what happened last night, and then move forward.
That's what I say, too.
That's my
opinion as well.
All right. Why don't we, though, do Public Works and Human Services first, since they are scheduled first, and we'll do the other last.
What about library?
She's right there. All right, let's proceed then with the library budget 377.
As you've probably noticed, your packet had a 2019 narrative and not a 2020 narrative. So here's the 2020 narrative. Luckily, there isn't a whole lot of difference from year to year what we do. But library system, by the way, I'm Barb Bratton. I'm the library director for Kenosha Public Library and also the Kenosha County Library System. Clearly, I'm here for the Kenosha County Library System. So Chapter 43 of Wisconsin statutes created systems in 1971. So there are single county systems, there are multi-county systems, there are about 16 of those in the state right now, and each of us is directed to provide the technology delivery support and for the libraries that we serve. So we serve all the libraries in Kenosha County, which of course is Kenosha Public Library, all four branches, and also the library in Twin Lakes and Salem. So the Kenosha County Library System provides support for all of those. Your budget puts our expenses in two categories, which I think is difficult perhaps to understand as well. So I brought you more detailed budget along with that, so that you can see exactly what the county pays for. So the idea of systems is to do two different things. One is to make sure that all the libraries in the state have equal access to the technology infrastructure that they need. So if it's a very, very tiny library or it's one of the larger libraries, everybody has an equal chance and an equal footing there when it comes to having all the technology infrastructure they need for the information age. The other is to make sure that every citizen in Wisconsin has access to a public library, which is not the case in every state. So Wisconsin is way ahead in that. And how that happens is that either citizens pay directly to a library, like the citizens of Kenosha do, the residents of Kenosha, or they pay directly to, they pay a county tax instead, and that's what the system does is do the calculations for that, so that our libraries are reimbursed for the use by citizens who don't pay directly into a library. So for instance, Pleasant Prairie doesn't have a library of its own, and so they pay a library tax instead. And then whoever uses our library from Pleasant Prairie, we keep track of that, and so whatever happened in 2018, we get that money in 2020, if that makes sense.
All right, discussion?
Move would be approved.
Second.
Yeah.
Probably the first question I've ever had on library.
The internet service here more than doubled. What is that? Why is that?
Yeah, that is a state-run organization that provides our support for that, and that is a reduced cost. I mean, that's pretty cheap for, you know, for internet service altogether, but those rates change from year to year.
I mean, it more than doubled, did it?
Yeah, but it's still significantly low when you think about the service.
All right. We don't have a choice to RFP that out or anything, or...
You wouldn't get a better rate. It's AT&T right now. That's the government contract.
Why don't you remind everybody who this applies to, because it doesn't apply to most people. The library system here, this is for the non-serviced areas, correct?
Well, that's what the county budget that we ask for is that non-resident use, yes. So you're reimbursing the libraries in Kenosha County for use by citizens who don't pay to the library. And then there's some shared resources like all the electronic books and the network costs and things like that. You see, the state also pays us.
All right, any other quick discussion? Yes, Mark.
I think it has more to do with the structure. The community library looks like you have a total budget of $242,382. That does not include wages. That's just this information you talk about.
It has nothing to do with that.
It has nothing to do with the county, because I've abstained from all voting because my wife wasn't at the county library system, and I've done that to try to keep But it doesn't look like anything, and that's why I wanted to bring it up. Anything that we do here has nothing to do with wages, benefits, or anything for her, so I can vote when it comes to the board.
That's right. Community library has its own its own thing going over there. This is just a different organization that supports all the libraries.
Okay, thank you.
Further discussion on the issue? Is there a motion?
I made
there was.
All right. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Right. Incidentally, if you want a cup of coffee an hour later, there is some behind me. Just help yourself. So we'll move now into the public works. God bless you. That's at page, starts at page 93.
93 and starting at 93.
Go ahead.
Yeah, what everyone's pants getting handed is a, this is what we do every year. It's a handout. It's 14 pages. For those of you who are at our other meeting, it's the same thing. So could you. And each page, there might be one or two pages for each of the divisions within the Public Works Department. And Mr. Chairman, what we've typically done in the past is go division by division and approve that division's budget. Start with like highway or planning development, and approve that budget, and then move on to the next division.
All right. So you want to start with facilities?
Well, I want to just say a few words in total first, and then I want to go with highways first.
Okay.
And I'd like to just kind of give a little bit of a framework of how public works fits into the whole county. So if you look at the first page, On the left-hand side is the operating expenses by division, and on the two right-hand columns is our revenue by division. We're just rounding everything to thousands of dollars here so people can get a whole feel for it. Our total operating expenses for 2019 were $20,881,000. 2020 has gone up to 21.3. That is just at the subtotal at the division level. Then if you go down a little bit further, there's some other smaller division. So our total expenses for all the public works is about $21.5 million. Now the revenue is split into two chunks. There's the levy chunk, which in the 2019 budget is $8,231,000. In 2020, our levy is in the budget is $8,449,000, and that's about 12.3% of the total county levy. And it's $218,000 or 2.65% ahead of last year's levy. Everybody see that?
Mm-hmm.
So in our expenses, if you go to page 1A, now this page might not be in from the last time, but I talked about it. It just gives a little feel for where our expenses are split up. And in public works, there's a comparison there of 2020, 2019. It shows where our expenses are for golf facilities, all of our various divisions. And in the personnel category, it's in the top box over on the right-hand side, about halfway down. Our personnel expenses are about 61%. Contracted services, 19, supplies, 19, and a small percentage of fixed expenses. So that's how our budget breaks down. It's almost two-thirds related to personnel, which is wages and benefits. And out of the increase of $211,000, a little more than $100,000 is in the wage increases due to the market adjustments that were made. We'll also cover some, we'll cover a lot of CIP. The total capital budget for 2020, the bonding part of it is $22,850,000. Last year it was $22,900,000. And out of that number for 2020, 84% of it, or a little over $19 million, is in public works projects. And close to $10 million of that is highways alone. And the only other point I'd like to make before I move on is, when I look back at where we've been the last 3 years, the total amount that we budgeted to spend versus the revenue, we always budget basically to break even, and levy is what you need to support your, we in the last 3 years combined, we have been off $331,000 over. That's what we've given back to the general fund on an expenditure budget of 20 some million a year. So it's a very, very small error ratio in total. In fact, last year we lost a little bit. 2 years before that we made a little bit each year. So overall we've been pretty close in our total budgeting. So that's all I'm going to say in total about our division. I don't know if anybody has any questions before we, I want to mix up the order a little bit. I want to talk about highways first. I'm not sure what page that's on. It's like page
127.
Well, in your budget book it's there, but in my handout it's like page 8 or 9. And on the top of each page of the handout, when you find that highway page, I'll explain a little bit.
What page is it?
Page 10.
I'm sorry, it's page 10. There's one page that shows the operating expenses and another page that shows the capital page, our capital expenses. So on the operating expense page, this is a common format that we use for, we've been using it for years now with our department. And the top part of each of these pages in the box is the expense section. And then the middle part is the revenue section. And the net is zero. So for the highway department, the on here, what we're showing, a levy increase underneath the revenue section of $118,000. We have spent some time since the budget was first issued going in and re-examining, trying to find if we could cut expenses or have some more opportunities for levy. And we looked real close at the work we're doing for the state and the expenses that we put in for this department, and we feel real comfortable and very confident that we could increase the revenue number by an additional $150,000 and wipe out that decrease. We spent a lot of time since the budget first came out trying to figure out if we could actually do that, and we're certain we can.
Jeff?
How are you, sir? I mean, what gives you, I mean, for us to increase the revenue, just what is it that's going to happen?
Well, we'll do a little bit more work that basically before we would have been expending the money on things that we would do for the county that wouldn't be reimbursed. And when we looked at it again, we're going to be able to get that. We think we can get the money back from the state for that work.
There's additional state work that we can do that we can generate that revenue. The state's confirmed that we'll be able
to. So the state has confirmed. It's not a maybe.
No.
Okay, because I don't want to just say we're going to get more revenue without having a firm commitment.
They told us they will reimburse us for that additional amount.
Okay. So we're reducing by 150.
Yeah.
Okay.
Discussion? Why don't you tell the committee how many miles you intend to pave?
We intend to pave of our own 13, but we have other projects that would actually do more. We're going to do Highway KR next year. We're going to start on Highway S. So that mileage, we'll hire contractors to do that. But as far as our own paving, we're budgeting about 13 miles.
And just to clarify, KR is actually going to be a state-run project,
right.
But the Highway S project is our project that is going to start next year. County Highway F is another big project. So those are in addition to what everybody commonly talks about is the resurfacing that we do. The resurfacing is what Jim's referencing. Plan on, we target about 13 miles. That's kind of the goal every year.
Further discussion on highways?
Yes, just so I'm clear, so that 150 is off of the levy?
Right.
Well, if your revenue goes up,
yeah,
that means you're covering
it.
Yes.
I'm just saying, am I looking at
we
this
will
right?
Reduce the levy request. On page one, I sort of glossed over this, but because I was excited to tell you about what was happening with highways. But
a couple deep breaths, John. That's all
yeah,
good.
It's a good thing. We originally thought that we have this increase of 6%. And we will actually have a small decrease in the levy. And our total increase of our total increase in levy of $218,000 will be $68,000, which is, I don't know, 0.5%. So definitely below 1%.
He's basically looking at the far bottom right, that $218,000 increase that's in this projection here. When we net the additional $150,000 in state revenue off of that, yeah, it's like $68,000.
The only other thing I forgot to mention, if you just quickly flip to page two before we go into each individual budget, this is the headcount, the full-time headcount for the Public Works Department for 2019 and 2020. In 2019, we have budgeted full-time equivalent of 125.25. You may wonder how you can get a fourth of a headcount. We had somebody in there for a quarter of this year, and he retired. He did not. We had his replacement figured into the budget. He was Dan Treelor from our P&D department. Mm-hmm. And then the increase in 2020 in the highway department of 0.8 in the highway department is because we're going to hire a person probably after the first quarter. Because with the additional lane miles and the additional work, we think we're going to have to, over a couple year period, probably hire two new people. And we're going to start by hiring one partway through 2020 and see how it goes. So that's the 0.8 person. And those dollars are already figured into that highway budget.
Yes.
So just to kind of clarify things here, in-house, highways will do approximately 13 miles of local road improvements. But out for bid and done by other contractors will be Highway S, which encompasses how many miles approximately, Ray?
Clement can probably be about 3 miles, because you're talking phase one.
Well, 31 to I-94.
Right. So it'll be phase one for 2020, and then you've got County F.
Yeah.
And that's going to be approximately how many miles out there?
That's less than...
Yeah, that might be a mile at the most.
Yeah.
Okay. 2.9.
2.9?
So those are all on tap for 2020.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I just wanted to clarify, Council Trump Highway S is a two-year...
Can you speak up, please?
Speak up, Clement.
The Council Trump Highway S is a two-year project. It's still going to be completed next year. It's going to be completed 2021.
Yep. And Highway S is how many year program, this particular phase?
Well, it's actually, the goal is, even though there's two phases, between 31 and H, and then from H to the interstate, the goal is still to actually conduct both those, begin them both next year, but it'll be a two-year project to get everything done for both phases.
Thank you.
Do you want to approve? Is there a motion on Highway?
Motion to approve Highway.
Second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you very much. Now we can go back to the order that your booklet is in.
Oh.
So I think it's page 3, starts with...
Yeah, both my ears are ringing. Okay. Loud and clear.
All right. Let me know if they're slacking over.
Okay, we'll do that. I'll do that, Supervisor Jax. Duly noted.
Thank you.
All right, Jim, go ahead.
Okay, page 3 is UW Extension's budget. In 2020, we propose to spend $208,000. This year, we're going to spend $205,000. And the one biggest item in there is the contract that we signed with the University of Wisconsin for the services of all of Beverly Baker's folks. And that number is going up from 182.7 to 183.9. That's the largest, the small increase. Their levy is going from, well, they don't have any revenue in this particular category, so their levy is going to go up about $2,000 to $3,000.
Do they have any new programs?
Yeah, the next page, there's two other categories in the UW Extension budget which are levy neutral. The top part of that, what we call the office account, is their programs that they run, 4-H, Master Gardeners, that type of thing. We budget it at a zero levy, zero surplus. There's expenses, and then they charge fees to cover that. So it's levy neutral, and we just kind of leave the numbers the same. And then the bottom part is their after-school program, just a small program, but if they provide a service to the Unified School District or any other schools for anything having to do with after school, they will bill them and to cover their expenses. So both of these are included in the umbrella of UW Extension, but are levy neutral. Don't cost the county anything.
Discussion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Further discussion from anyone? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of the UW Extension budget, say aye.
Aye.
Loud and clear, Jeff.
Thank you. Next.
Okay, the next page to talk about is the planning and development budget, which is on page 5. Again, the same format. Planning and development has 5 people in their budget, and they'll have 5 people next year. Their levy as revenue here is planned to increase about $7,000 or $8,000. The biggest increases in here, there was one budgeted amount underneath contracted services for we have a category called other contracted services, and we bumped that budget up $40,000 from 2019 to 2020 to cover a program whereby planning development was going to hire consultants to investigate and clear for environmental purposes or whatever these properties that we buy or we take over from tax deeds. So that would have been a $40,000 increase in expenses. The revenue side of it is, there's a category there called summer's revenue, and it's sort of a misnomer. For years past, P&D would provide services to summers and bill back summers, and they would pay us. In 2020, we're going to add another Salem Lakes, and provide that same service, so the revenue is going to go up. Now, at the PDEC committee and at our Public Works committee, they wanted to make a change to this budget to take the contracted services budget, which we wanted to increase by $40,000. They felt that that increase should only be $20,000, basically because we have underspent that budget in the past 2 years. We've always had a $30,000 budget. In past years, we've spent as much as $100,000 when there was a lot of floodplain activity, and Andy's folks had to coordinate different things associated with buying floodplain. Now, we never know when that's going to come up, so we've just been budgeting $30,000. The budget for this year was $70,000. And our committees recommended that that number get cut back.
Discussion, yes.
So, are we comfortable with 20?
Andy, do you want to?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are. I mean, it's one of those things that's an unknown right now, just because it's a new task that we're undertaking through the tax delinquent team. So planning development is given the task of these properties that are contaminated, is to work through the phase one, phase two, if you need to do that or not. We haven't ever done that, so I mean.
But he just said it was underutilized. How you made a comparison.
We just didn't spend the money. We had a $30,000. We spent this year. I think we spent about $12,000 so far. Last year we spent about $12,000 on a $30,000 budget. But we didn't have this program.
Right, it's a new program. So previously, that account was to cover any contracted services that might pop up in a year that we can't foresee. And so sometimes we do use it and sometimes we don't. The increase was to cover the tax delinquent environmental study.
Okay. So through the chair to our court counsel, by having them clear these, that reduces our liability, correct?
You want to know before you go forward with the purchase whether
or not
there's an environmental
hazard. Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right.
So that's one change that they proposed. The other change, if you flip, I think it's page 14. I hate to keep going back and forth, but there's a couple other small budgets.
I used to go back and forth all the time.
Pardon me? You're used to this, right?
Yeah.
I'll stop going back and forth. But these couple of P&D, there's a budget on that. There's a few budgets on that page that are levy neutral. The top four all apply to the Planning and Development Department. The only one that really has any levy associated with it is the Board of Adjustment. And the Board of Adjustment budget for 2019 included five people, and the levy is $8,000. For 2020, unbeknownst to yours truly, who is doing the budget, that was reduced to three people. So our committees felt that it was appropriate to reduce that budget by about 40%, $3,000, to bring it down to the level of three people versus five people. And we're okay with that.
Okay.
So we have the planning development budget. There's no capital associated with this. So it's everything on page five with the proposed $20,000 reduction and then the Board of Adjustment reduction of $3,000.
Move to approve as amended by the PDEC committee.
Second.
All right, discussion, Mark.
I just want to make sure this is clear. The budget amount last year is $30,000. You're not going to $10,000. You're going to $50,000.
Right.
Instead of $70,000. So it is right. Increasing at $20,000. So just wanted to make sure that was all.
So that'll give another $23,000 back to the levy. Reduce the levy by another $23,000.
Keep on going. Sounds good.
Bill.
Just a clarification on the Summers revenue. Summers pays $50,000 per year, has in the past year budget. With the inclusion of Salem Lakes, are they also paying $50,000 to bring it to 100?
In general, yes. It all depends on the revenue, so it kind of give or take above or below.
As an approximate.
That's our best estimate, yes.
Yeah, right.
Further discussion? There is a motion on the floor. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, thank you. What's next?
What's next? page 6, I believe.
Four?
It should be on page 4.
It's on page 6. They're saying it's on page 4, isn't it? Four.
Oh, you're right, Paul.
That wasn't my joke. That was somebody else's. Okay, the golf budget is, as you all know, the golf is budgeted to break even. I think the last year that they didn't break even was 2011. They've had several years of making a little bit of revenue every year to cover themselves. So in 2020 compared to 2019, their expenses are going to go up from 3,017,000 to 3,090,000, but their revenues will go up to cover it.
So this year there's projected no profit.
It's going to be small this year. The weather's been really crappy, so we're planning on a small profit.
But the revenues are going up next year.
What about what'd you do in 2018? Was there a profit?
There was a profit.
How much?
I'll tell you. In 2018, the profit was $55,000. 2017, the profit was $61,000.
Gabe?
Okay. I have a couple of questions, actually. The main one would be, I kind of defer by saying that the golf department has been making money every year because we're bonding money every year, and it's a matter of the debt service from the county. This year, we had $605,000. That we're asking to bond. Last year was 500 and some thousand, 730,000, which some were paid from their funds or the reserves, and we bonded 202. Also, it was projected last year for 535,000, you know, for this year, for $535,000 bonding, I'm sorry, capital improvement, and bond the 268,000. Now we come in and say, let's bond 605,000, which is a heck of a lot of money. And then we want to say the golf is making money. No, it's not. We're going back to about 10, 12 years ago, we had the same problem. And we got to put a stop to it. So, I mean, if I was on the committee or whatever, my suggestion would be to take the bond out. If they make money like they're claiming they're doing it, they can always come back with a budget modification during the year, and they can spend the money that they're making.
So is this your capital budget?
The capital budget
is
on the next page.
Here, or is that
the capital budget on? Is on the next page.
So that's part of the capital budget vote?
Yeah,
not
the first page is just the operating expenses.
So that's what we're talking
and
about.
From an operating expense standpoint, the golf courses have been making money for the last few years. It is true that for 2019, we budgeted this year about $700,000 in capital expenses, and we're financing 500 some odd thousand with reserves. So this year we're only bonding about $200,000 for golf. We have basically used up the golf reserves. The money that they've accumulated in their account, in their fund, will be gone by the end of this year. If we add a little profit, it might bring that up a little bit.
What was that number when we started this year?
500 some thousand.
So what are you spending $700,000 on capital projects?
This year?
Yes.
There's equipment.
Yeah, but tell us what they are.
Oh.
What's on page 7?
No, he's asking about 19, so I'd have to go grab my budget.
No, I'm talking about 20.
Oh, 2020, okay. There's $185,000 in golf cart replacements. That's about the last third, except for there, I think we have to do a little bit more in 2021. Every 4 to 5 years, we start this over. It takes 3 years. It's between $150,000 and $200,000 a year for 3 years, and then all the golf carts are replaced. Then we take a couple years off. Then we start the cycle again. So we replaced about $180,000 this year of golf carts, and we're planning to do the same next year. Mowers and equipment replacement. I think in the budget book, all the details down there, but there's a couple of big mowers. They cost $60,000, $70,000 a piece. you want the exact detail, because I can go get the book and read it off. But that's what it is. It's a piece of equipment, $150,000 golf course improvements. That is there to fix a couple on the golf course. We still have some irrigation problems, some water retainage problems on a couple of holes. That should finish the work on. Is it blue
16? But to clarify, it's more of a stormwater issue.
Stormwater issue. Yeah.
It's not an irrigation issue. Yeah. The irrigation is fixed on the blue, and the white is complete. But there are stormwater issues as the rain continues to come. We thought we didn't want to do a lot next year capital-wise. Well, actually, Dan wanted to do a bunch, but given the context of the whole budget, we weren't able to do that, but we felt this would be a really good investment because that $150,000 will address some of the issues that prevent us from opening the course or opening it in a full way based on the water. That this will address some of the water issues in at least one area of the course. Pretty significant area, too. So. Yeah, basically what's there is, and if you look forward, like at some of the equipment expenses, you can see that what we're trying to do is level load stuff, so we don't have the spikes, because oftentimes questions are asked, you know, can we just not do it this year? You can always not do something, right? But when you do that, it's like deferred maintenance. You then set yourself up for, at some point, you're going to have to do a big thing. And we really have worked hard within Public Works to try to level load stuff so that we don't have those big spikes in things. This is an attempt at doing that when you look at how we project things out going forward. We're trying to do that in all the departments because there was a lot of deferred equipment purchases over the decades, and we're trying to get it so that it is level loaded. We're, like we've been doing with the buildings as well. The maintenance that we do on the buildings, stuff has been level loaded so that we can not wait for stuff to break, invest wisely in the preventive maintenance, because generally any buck you spend on preventive maintenance is going to be one-third to one-half of what it is until you wait when something breaks and then deal with it that way. So that's just a little explanation of what we're doing.
Yeah.
So just if I heard you right about the golf carts, we have a cycle of 3 years. We're right now for 2020 would be the third year of that cycle, and then we take a couple of years off. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just to clarify, Jeff, in that...
No, I'm looking at yep. that $30,000 yeah, for 2020.
Yeah. That's some BEV carts for next year that didn't make the... Okay. It will be replacing the service.
I guess my question is, could we flip-flop 2020 with 2021? What would be the harm in that? Could you tell me if we did that by lowering the bonding?
Yeah. The warranty is off on those golf cars, so all the preventative maintenance, any breakdowns, anything that happens to those golf cars that we would have right now would be out of pocket. And if we do it the way that it's budgeted, the golf car's maintenance stays under warranty. And with this new contract that we have, we negotiated a 5-year warranty. We've had a 4-year warranty in the past. Now we're getting a 5-year warranty, so we're able to have that year of 2022 with no expense. It was 4 years up to this point, but in this contract we've been able to negotiate a 5-year warranty contract, and so we were able to have that other year.
Are there quite a few golf carts that break down?
Well, yeah, for sure. They get used every day. And
can you give me a percentage of the fleet that break down on a yearly basis?
I would say, well, the service techs come every single week and fix the golf cars. I would say at least 30% or so, you know, have some issues. And the longer that they run, the starter brushes go out and the brakes start wearing. So the safety of the golf cars there also.
Thank you.
All right. Was there John?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think golf is becoming less popular, and also believing that there's not support for $23 million in bonding here, I move to remove the $605,000 in capital from the golf budget.
Is there a second? Second? Anyone second?
Well, I'll tell you what, for the sake of discussion, I'll second that.
Okay.
What would you lose if we did that?
Yeah.
So I can talk in a general sense. If Dan wants to jump in, if I misspeak or you can add some additional information, Dan, feel free to jump in. It kind of goes back to what I was saying before. You know, we can put off any of these things. As Dan indicated with the golf carts, by really pulling that out, we're probably going to set ourselves up then for having 1 year where we're going to have stuff that isn't under warranty that's going to cost us extra money out of pocket. And those out of pocket, just to go back to a very early part of the conversation, yeah, the golf course does make, I don't like to use the word profit because we're a government entity, so our revenues have exceeded expenses for the last roughly 8 years. And those revenues exceed expenses on the operating side. So if we do something like that where we create a gap year where things aren't covered under warranty, those are going to be covered out of those expenses. So that's going to then reduce the revenues. It's going to reduce what we have left over to put back in our, into our kitty to use for capital projects going forward. So it kind of shooting ourselves in the foot. That's what I'd say about that specifically. Same thing with the when we defer replacing equipment, the mowers, if people haven't had a chance to see some of the mowers that Dan's got out there, these are precision pieces of equipment. They are not the lawnmower that you get at Home Depot. These things are adjusted within thousandths of an inch to maintain the greens the way that we need to maintain them. And if we don't replace those things on a regular basis, those things become extremely expensive to keep within tolerance and operating effectively. So that's a second. That goes right to our golf course conditions. If we don't have good golf course conditions, that's when golfers start to leave the courses. So that's how that is handled. And the other big chunk next year has to do with the stormwater issues. We're investing so much time in stormwater because I think everybody's aware of what's happening from a stormwater standpoint, because I've gotten calls from many of the supervisors that are sitting in this room with constituents that have stormwater issues. The golf courses are not immune to that. And the two biggest problems in running a golf course are getting the water onto the course and then getting the water off of the course. And what we're trying to do with this is address an issue specifically on hole number 16 that bleeds over into some of the surrounding holes. It's a very good investment of $150,000 that's going to help at least, hopefully, help us manage some of the storm issues that we've got that affect our playability right now. So that's a lot of stuff, but that's basically my response.
Mark?
All these points are really well taken. I mean, we have to take care of our stuff. No one's, I think, denying that. I think what I have a problem with is we have golf courses that are open to the public. They're owned by private citizens who pay taxes, who go out and borrow the money, and those golf courses are paying it back, and that's who we're competing against. We're competing against people that are paying the salaries of everyone who works for the county. So, you know, we get in this catch-22 where we develop all of this stuff, and then we have to maintain it. That's where those golf courses have to borrow the money themselves and have to pay it back themselves. And I just honestly believe that's what our golf courses should do, too. So they've got to find a way to, you know, find that money to where they can maintain these things. They have to be maintained. There's no question about that. And I've heard reports from Dan and how great, everyone's talking about how great these golf courses look. So they've done a good job up until now. Are we going to get the rains we've got this year, next year? Are they going to be worse? Are they going to be less? No one knows that. So, you know, is the drainage needed this year? I'm sure they want it, so they can open up, make sure they don't open up. But we get to the point where we're competing against private businesses. And that's, I think, not the job of the county.
Jeff?
One more thing. The 2020 golf carts are going to be under a five-year warranty?
Great.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, I understand what Supervisor Poole is saying, and there is a philosophical difference over bonding between some of the people on the board, and that's healthy. But I personally will not support moving bonding off another year when we're getting it so cheap now. It's like you're gambling with the taxpayers' money that the interest rates won't go up before you end up doing that. So, I mean, cutting the sheriff's trucks for 1 year, I was all for that. We don't have to, you know, give them double the trucks next year. Or vehicles. I'm not doing trucks ever. I won't support that. But regardless, you know, that was taking it out. And I get that. If we're not having to bond for that later, then you are reducing the bonding and you're not gambling with the taxpayers' money later. Time value of money to me. And money's cheap right now. So that's my take on this. So thank you.
Dennis.
You know, we discussed this at the committee level. And I've gone back and forth for 27 years myself with these questions about should we be in competition with private business. My belief has always been strongly no, but since you're dealt these cards and you are in this business, you have to support. I had to fight to get the golf courses to be able to sell beer. And in the first year we did that, we raised our revenues $75,000. That was so we didn't compete with private businesses. If you're in this business, the decision you have to make here, and as a county board we have to make, is are we going to be in this business? If you are, you have to support it. Now, if we go and pull this bonding for this year, we don't spend the money on the golf carts, we would have not had the $512,000 to put in from the profits. I know we don't like to call it profits, but that's what it is. So we didn't have to bond for 2019 to the tune of $500,000. So you go a year or two here, don't bond, don't keep those golf courses up, you won't have that $50,000-$60,000 a year. You're gonna kill any profit that the golf courses have. So decide whether you want to be in the business or not. If you do, you need to support this. And truthfully, it's a meager amount of money for what the work is going to be accomplished at those golf courses. And the carts, believe me, if you have a ramshackle fleet of carts, it's going to show and it's going to cost you. And that's just the carts. Mowers are very complex. And one screw up for 1 week with the wrong mower can ruin a season. It can certainly ruin a green, which costs you about $140,000. So if you're going to be in this business, support it. It's not that large of an amount to bond for, and Supervisor Guest is very correct. We've never, ever bonded at these low numbers. So I would suggest that you ignore that motion.
Why are we only making $50,000 when we have a budget of over $3 million and bonding of over $600,000? $50,000 doesn't sound like a very hefty profit. I mean, I disagree with what you said earlier that we're in a break even. I think the county board has made it very clear for many years that we were not on a break even or on going into the red. $50,000 is nothing to brag about.
Every year we have budgeted for operating expenses to equal operating revenue. So there'd be no levy involved. And I don't think this is the first year that we've used accumulated reserves to pay back to purchase equipment, but it certainly is the biggest. I think we might have done it a few years ago for maybe $100,000. But that's always been our charge, is to make sure that operating expenses equal operating revenues, with a couple of exceptions of using any accumulated build in the reserve to pay for equipment. Gabe. So that's our defense.
I just want to add again to what I said before. We keep on saying that we're making money. We're not. It's the same thing that I say I'm self-supporting, but my kids are paying for all my housing and cars expenses. Then we will not be self-supporting. Now, operating expenses, they're making $50,000, but we're giving them $605,000. We gave them $200,000 last year. I'm not really sure on the years before. I can go back to 10, 12 years ago when this discussion rose with the golf. And even at that point, they were not losing much money because we were paying, the county was paying out of the general fund. So now, if we want to be honest about it, let's say that the golf department is going to lose $605,000 this year. They did not make any money last year. They lost $700,000 because they had $500,000 in the bank, the reserves, whatever it is, that was used, and also we bonded $200,000. I agree that if we had to bond for anything, now is the time to bond because of the interest rate, and yes. But I'm not looking to bond any money for the golf. whatever money they make it, spend it, and keep on going. They want the county to borrow some, not at this point, but we'll see how that proceeds in the next few years. If they want to bond, they would have to pay the debt service on that. Then it will be self-supporting. Until then, at least let's be honest about it and say that we are giving the money to the golf. I'm not willing to do that. I don't know if anybody else is willing to do that.
All right, further discussion here? Yes, Ron.
I just think that, you know, we have golf courses. I think I can't think of pets without a golf course for myself. I mean, and so we're either going to support it or we're not going to support it. They come in here and say they need the equipment, and I think we got to provide the equipment. And if they start getting to the point where they lose money, then I guess they'll have to justify that and tell us why. But in the meantime, I'm not for cutting that out. We got to supply them the equipment to make the golf courses for the public a good. I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but we just can't get out of the fact that we have them. And so let's eliminate them all, if that's what you're saying. Because if you're not going to provide them with the equipment to take care of it, then you might as well just shut it down.
Jeff?
I agree. I mean, if we're either in or we're out, and we're going to compete with other golf courses, and that's just the state of affairs. We could certainly sell them off if that's what the board decided to do, but we have to maintain them. And to Gabe's point, I understand what he's saying, but the golf course is not an entity that can go out and borrow money. So what do they do to get the money to upkeep their facilities? I mean, in principle, I don't disagree with what he's saying, but there's no way for them to do that. So, I mean, we have them, we need to support them, and that's where it is. And we need to keep the bonding in there now because of what it costs our taxpayers now. That's my opinion. Thank you.
Right. Further discussion, Brian?
I just want to make a point, too. I mean, I've been here 20 years now, which is hard to believe, but I remember probably 10 years ago, prior to the current golf director, when we were losing hundreds of thousands of dollars.
That's right.
3-4. So I know 50,000 doesn't sound much in the overall scheme of things, but it's better than losing 300,000, 400,000, 500,000.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I agree with what a lot was said. I seconded the motion just to get this nice discussion going. But would the maker of the motion be willing to do a reduced amount? And my question then back to you guys would be, let's say we reduce the golf carts by, say, $50,000. What would be the ramifications of that, Dan?
If we would reduce that amount, we would have a mixed fleet of golf carts. The golf carts that we're currently replacing are Easygoers. We're replacing them with Yamahas. Yamahas would have the fuel injection and the quiet ride. There would be a lot of disappointed golfers when all the Yamahas were out on the golf course and only the Easygoers were left. I mean, having a mixed fleet, what we did so we didn't have a mixed fleet is we had the Yamahas when we bought them first at Petrifying Springs. And then when we got the second install, we brought them all out to Brightondale, and then we brought the Easygoers back, and now the Easygoers, and to replace the Easygoers with the, you will not believe the comments that we get from all of our golfers on how much nicer the Yamahas are because of the electronic fuel injection and because of the quiet ride and how much quieter. They say that those gas cars are 2 decibels louder than an electric car, you know, and they're just so much a better golf experience out of those Yamahas. So it would really, really mess it up if you would reduce that.
Same thing
with the mowers. I mean, the mowers, the superintendents go through each and every piece of equipment and say, this is what's going to cost us money next year. And that's why we get that amount.
Thank you.
Mike?
I might have missed earlier. In the budget book, there's a reserve of $528,000. But I thought I heard you say, Jim, there's no money left in the reserve. What happened to the $528,000?
We spent it this year. Beginning of the year, we had around the low 500s, and we budgeted to spend that $700,000 that Supervisor Nuto was talking about to pay for this year's purchases of equipment. Approximately $200,000 was bonded, $500,000 came out of the reserve.
$100,000
reserve. Yeah, there's not that much. I was a little over aggressive. But there's basically no, there will be basically nothing left in there except probably this year's profit, which isn't at this point supposed to be a lot.
You said that you bonded only 200,000 in the book. It says 458 actual for bonding in 2018. So is that spending or is that just trying to figure out if we can carry over
2019. So 200 there, 528, and that's covered. Okay, thank you.
All right,
Supervisor Rodriguez.
Thank you. I've got a few things, but first, if you could clarify for me, you said that we replace about a third of the golf carts every year, and then we take a break for 3 years, and then we start again. But if you look in the CIT here, we've got 185 for this year. You said that 30,000 for 185 for 2020. You said the carryover 30,000 in 2021 was to do the beverage carts. And then we've got a year off. I mean, where are the other 2 years of taking that break you told us before we borrow another $195,000?
We said there'd be a 2 year break. Okay. And the 2 year break is 21 and 22, except for the 30,000 we have to do for the beverage carts. 2021. So the big bulk of the purchases of 70 or so carts happened. Will not have. We won't be buying those in 21 and 22.
Okay. And then to go off what Supervisor Nuno stated, where and I agree with this, that golf needs to be self-sufficient, and that's what we're told year after year. That golf is self-sufficient, but then they come to us because they're not an entity that can bond. They come to the county board and ask the county to bond. I get that. But, and I think what Supervisor Nuno is getting at is that we're in the same situation with Brookside, yet Brookside is tasked and charged with paying down that debt service, and that's what they're doing. And I think until we can get golf to get to that point, we need to reconsider golf because there are so many other privately held golf courses throughout the county. And don't get me wrong, our golf courses are beautiful, they're well kept, and I can appreciate them. But to say that they maintain themselves is asinine because it's not happening year after year after year. I mean, they're in the red every single year. You can show us that they're in the black, and that this year we got $50,000. And I agree with Chairman Rose that, I mean, that is measly in comparison to what we're buying and what we're spending. But go beyond that. You look at what we've done with Brookside. I mean, Brookside's come a long way. They asked us to bond to redo the facilities. We did that, and they're paying it back. What, can we not charge golf with that same task? That's my question. And if we can't, like I said, it's time to reevaluate.
All right, further discussion? Should we vote?
I don't.
Yes? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
So, just to piggyback on what Supervisor Rodriguez said, I think another way of looking at the spending is that we're subsidizing each golfer whatever we borrow. And I find it odd that we borrow money for one particular sport, and why not another sport? Why not, why aren't we doing this for hockey or curling? It's kind of odd that it's all for golf. Where, and I would be interested to find out what one of the private golf courses, they couldn't operate like this. They'd go under.
Anybody else who hasn't spoken? Jeff.
Well, we don't own a hockey facility or a curling facility. We own golf courses, and we have to maintain them, and that is the bottom line. I mean, we either get out of it or we don't, but we own them, and we have to maintain them. The thought of saying the golf courses can just subside on their own without us bonding and doing the improvements there, that would never happen. So I guess I don't understand where this is going, but thank you.
We did owe hockey. We did owe hockey.
All right, any other discussion, Supervisor Rodriguez?
So Supervisor Gantz, I get what you're stating, but we need to look at it. This, just simply saying we have it, we have to take care of it without, and then you're throwing in there, well, maybe we consider stopping the program and ending golf at a county level. You know, we don't have a hockey rink, but if citizens came to us and said, we want a hockey rink, why don't you build it? And oh, by the way, year after year after year after year, it's not going to pay for itself. Would we take that task on? We look them in the eye and say, respectfully, we appreciate where you're coming from, but we can't. We can't.
I agree.
our citizens, I mean, how do I go back to my district and look at my citizens and tell them, okay, the vast majority of you don't golf, okay? And with that, I need, you know, we're going to bond another per person, whatever that number is. How do you explain that and say, well, we have it? You know, I sell cars for a living. That's what I do. I won't let somebody get into a car that I know they can't afford. Just because they can get approved for it, maybe their payment's too high against what their income is, I'll let them know, like, look, I don't want to let you do this because down the road it's going to hurt you. And that's the situation we're in now. And what it seems like this county board is doing is saying, it's all well, we already bought the car. Trade the car in, get a new car, get something you can afford, stop driving. You know what I mean? But this, we just can't year after year do this. And for you to say that we can't go to golf and say, you've got to make and repay repay the debt service. We tell Brookside to do it, and Brookside does it, and they do it well. And so, I mean, where's the fairness in that of making one of our, you know, facilities do that and telling the other one, that's okay, you don't have to worry about it?
All right, anything else, Ray? Jeff?
I don't want to prolong this anymore, but I kind of need to. So, there's talk about, you know, the private sector and the public sector and that kind of thing. And so there's a few things to keep in mind. So, to some extent, we're trying to compare apples and oranges. Right now, we can't sell hard liquor statutorily on the golf course. Can't do it. As Chairman Elderman indicated from Public Works, when we did the beer, our revenues went up $75,000 the first year. If we sold hard liquor, if we were able to do that, but statutorily we can't. I believe when we did projections, it was probably about triple that $75,000 what it would bring to the table. We could also open banquet facilities if we wanted to really compete directly. Most of the golf courses in our area will tell you they aren't making money on the golf. Where they're making money is on the banquet facilities.
Sure.
We're not doing that. We've made a conscious decision not to compete. What we're trying to do is grow the game of golf within the community so that even the private courses have better luck. What Dan does out there in terms of teaching youth, aggressively teaching youth and new golfers to get them into the game, they don't golf exclusively at our courses. They golf at the other local courses. That's part of our mission statement in golf, is to grow the game of golf in the community. We don't compete directly on a number of areas that are very lucrative, intentionally so we don't compete head-to-head. We let the private courses make that gravy. We don't do that. There's a minor, again, from an operation standpoint, there is no subsidy. When you plug in the capital, yes, we're asking to borrow money to fund the capital. Just like a private course, when they want to make a big capital investment, they borrow money. That's something we do similar to private courses. That's all I wanted to say. So kind of put some of these comments in context and connects the dots a little differently than kind of conventional thinking.
All right, just to remind you, we've scheduled human services at 7 and 10, so we've still got a few budgets here to go, so I'm not going to cut anybody off, but I'll call on our intern, Martin.
I was just curious about, so we're bonding like only $605,000, but then a couple years down the line, it seems like those expenses really start to jump, especially with one like that $735,000. I'm just wondering why they jump.
So we had a master plan done on the courses about 5 years ago, 7 years ago now, and what we've been doing is picking away at the items that need to be addressed. So we've replaced the irrigation system on the white course out at Brightondale, the blue course. We've put a new pump house in. So we've done a lot of infrastructure that was neglected for the, say, 20 years. These are the items that are left from that original master plan, mainly on the red course at Brightondale. There's some other things in there, but basically that's what those things are. They're still part of that original master plan, and we keep pushing them off until we can get into a better position to afford it.
Okay, so if we like fund it this year, then eventually down the line we're going to have to make a big investment to fulfill the master plan.
To address those remaining items, yep.
I just want to say for not only this department, but every department, anything that's out in the future is an estimate. And we'll set the clock back to zero when we do this next year, and hopefully you're here to see if those things are still there. But that's the way it works. And so we try to put these things on people's radar to show that something's coming up in the future. Don't forget about it. And that works in every department. And sometimes we forget or we don't know an amount, so we can't put something in the future here. And we don't tell everybody about everything, not because we don't want to, but sometimes you just don't know the amount. And sometimes things that are on here that are out in future years, we would love to do this year, but we can't do it. We're handed, as the county and as the finance division and as the board, a certain amount of money that you're allowed to borrow. You can't exceed that X amount of money. And the same thing with levy. So you have to operate within those constraints. And when we sit down to do the budget, we start working on this capital budget back in June. And we have 6, 7, 8 meetings trying to slice and dice and give every division, every department, including Brookside, whatever, a portion of what they need to go on with their business. So some of these things, maybe next year the $735,000 might move up to 2021, or it might move back. But if you didn't know that, I'm just trying to explain it to, yeah.
All right, are you ready to vote yet, Ron? Okay.
How much of your customers come from Illinois, come down to use our golf courses?
Well, we do 90,000 rounds a year.
Okay. Give or take. And some of that, they bring money.
You say out of the county from even Racine or Milwaukee or Illinois, outside of the county?
Dan? I would say probably 50%.
So that brings in, these people come in, spend their money here, spend their money in Kenosha County, bring in sales tax. We're forgetting all that stuff.
That was one of the things, there was an economic study done by the Velocity Group at Carthage a few years ago that, yeah, the roll-up effect, we haven't even talked about that, what golf brings to the table. For every dollar that's spent, there's a multiplier effect.
We get a half a cent on every dollar they spend for county sales tax. Besides everything they spend in a community, maybe where they come, when they come here, where they stop at a restaurant, they stop someplace else. So we forget all of that stuff. So the golf courses are making money a little bit, but I think they're a positive for the community.
All right, ready to vote then. The motion is to strike $605,000 from the capital budget, which is going to be bonded. Roll call, Jeff?
No.
No.
Yes.
No.
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 Yes. All right. Failed.
Can I add one thing about that? Just a comment. We're not going to strike anything with Chit 5. That's what the motion, that's what was passed. But I think from now on, we should be honest enough to let all the citizens in Kenosha know that the golf course is losing money and not that it's making money. So let's be honest about it. Thank you.
All right. Further discussion on golf. Yes, John.
Like Supervisor Wambolt says, I am up for just removing the mowers and equipment for 234 and the restroom replacement for 36, which would be removed $270,000 from the golf budget.
All right. Is there a second? No second, so it fails for want of a second. Further discussion on golf.
Also approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Motion to approve as presented. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
All right, one dissent. Moving on, what's the next item?
Parks.
All right, let's get Parks at
109. I think it's page 8.
What's that?
I think it's page 8.
Okay.
That's one of those.
Go ahead.
Just kind of in summary, the levy increase on parks from 2019 to 2020 is a $40,000 increase, which is 1.97%. The operating expense, which is budgeted to, including this levy, to break even, is on page 8. There's a list there of expenses that were increased or decreased, but we're asking for an increase of less than 2% to levy to finance parks. That's the operating side. Page 9 is parks capital. I want to just make a couple comments about some of the projects on here. Again, as Ray pointed out, we do some planning ahead. We don't exactly know all of the intricacies of what model number and things like that, but we do know that, and the parks does have this list of their equipment, and they have a regular rotation of what they think should be replaced. And that includes the playground number and the utility vehicles and their pickup trucks.
So those are all on a regular schedule of either maintenance, or if they exceed a certain amount of miles or a certain amount of years or depreciated or whatever, then we put them in the schedule to replace them. And the more is actually, that's two specific mowers for next year. There's a $70,000 more and a $30,000 more. One's bigger and does different types of things than a $30,000 more, but that's the two items that are in there. Pickup trucks, there's one each year for the next 5 years. The next item on there is the floodplain property. We do not have a specific item in mind there, but it seems every year there's some kind of property that comes up that the county would buy. This is not the FEMA type stuff that we went before the county board with a few months ago that was totally funded by bonding. This is just if a house or something comes up, or excuse me, that was totally funded by grants. This is $50,000 that was funded by bonding. If we had the opportunity to buy something out in the Fox River area and it came up, if you want to jump on those things when they come up, you have to have some money that's available. That's what that $50,000 is. The Pike River study and the K and the both North Branch and the South Branch are funded by grant money, so that is not bonding there. The Katy Park improvements is finishing up the last year and tidying up the last. We had a plan, I think it was a 3-year plan in a couple different phases to do improvements to Katy Park. There was roads, there was a restroom facility, there was a pier, there was. So that's the amount of money we need to finish up that project. The parks project design cost is a budget that we have that's very forward looking. There's a lot of different things that we could do with the parks that would, number one, they could generate some revenue, or they could provide additional recreational opportunities for our residents. And there's various projects in there. These are the design fees or the planning fees or the architect fees for various projects that the Parks Department is working on. I think I made a list and put it in the budget book detail. Parkland development is the revenue that we get from either the Boundless Adventures or from waste management covers that expenditure. So that's self-funding, there's no levy involved there. Building improvements at the Kemper Center for next year, there's a couple items. Hey Matt, is it one of the boiler and windows?
And windows.
Yeah. So we have a policy of every year, we used to just give them money to do the improvements, but now we sit with their committee and decide on which projects they're going to actually do and which ones we have a voice in what they do, and then we will fund the projects if it's we feel it's necessary. We own those buildings, so we have to keep them up. There's things that have to be done. They can't deteriorate. It's sort of the same story, you pay me now or pay me later. So that's a pretty thorough explanation, I think, of what's happening in parks. The total bonding is $821,000.
Discussion? Yes, Mark.
Jim, I just had a question on the floodplain property.
Yeah.
Is that a dedicated account? So everything in there is only for floodplain property?
Yeah.
And does it have a current balance that we run to build, because $50,000 is...
Right now there's a little over $100,000 okay. That we've accumulated.
So it's dedicated just for buying out...
Yeah, just for...
properties. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Just so you know, there's when we bond for these types of things, you have to really spend the money on what you bonded for, otherwise Barnell will get thrown in jail.
Yeah.
Because you can't. Which,
there's an
that might not be a bad thing.
Anyway,
you know that.
There's rules about those kind of things. So. Barna does a great job. The county needs Barna. So.
You said that with a few of the judges in here.
We got to watch the analogies. Last night there was a pen stabbing. Tonight there's jail.
I come from a long line of lawyers. I don't know what to say.
All right. Anything else here in parks?
Yes.
Oh, John.
Yeah. For many years, you know, we've gave Kemper Center like $39,000 it was, and then last year we're doing the. You were paying all the utilities for them, and you know it seems like it's a never-ending spigot down there. And so I removed $91,000 from the Kemper Center, which would make it $39,000.
All right, is there a second? Is there a second?
Well, I'll second again. I always want a discussion. Sorry about that, everybody. But I'm just curious, what will that do if we remove, I'm looking at you, sorry, but what will that do if we remove the 91,000?
If we don't fix the windows or fix the boiler?
Yeah. Obvious?
Pipe will freeze.
Shut the place down.
If we were looking at me, I thought he was pointing at everyone.
The biggest thing for us is the boilers. Of course, we have to replace a boiler. We already had that inspected this year. It's at the end of its expected useful life. So that's a major thing we have to do. As far as the windows themselves, there's major infiltration happening on that eastern side. We've been having severe, powerful winds from that northeastern. You see what happens to those rocks. It takes literally a 10, 15-pound rock and throws it into our parking lot. You can imagine what that wind does off of Lake Michigan infiltration. This building's way over 100 years old, and at Tuck Point, to my knowledge, hasn't been done. So it's time that we're, that this probably won't be the first or last time that we have to start to look at the eastern side of Kemper Center. And so this is taking one of the critical areas where we already know that leaking is taking place and starting to do those needs repairs to stop the leaking. Just like we did with the roofs, now we have to start focusing on the walls themselves.
All right. Anything else on this Kemper point? Yes.
Yeah, you know, Kemper Center is run by a nonprofit. We give them $130,000 for improvements and pay their heat bill. What do you think it would cost to run that park if the county had to run it? Enough said, okay? This is, it's always Kemper. I don't know why they go after Kemper. They go after Kemper for 3 years now. I'm done.
All right.
Katy Park. What do we get out of Katy Park? I live in the city. I don't get anything out of that. But I don't try to cut it.
All right, Supervisor Nardi, what?
What Supervisor Frederick was talking about, is there a time when Kemper is going to be self-sufficient? Or is it never going to happen? Is it only going to be the county keep putting the money in? Again, it's got to be kept up. We own it. I understand that. And to your point, Supervisor Frederick, I live out by KD Park. I'm not down here at Kemper Center. So, you know, the argument works both ways. Just so you know.
I wasn't pointing a finger at anybody. I was just making a statement.
We own it.
All right, anything else on the motion to cut the Kemper budget? Anything else? Let's take a roll call. John Paul?
No.
Yes.
And your abstain.
No.
John? No. All right, Phil. All right, any other discussion on parks?
Move it. Move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there further discussion? Yes?
Basically, in the parks budget, a lot of expenses were pulled forward, and in the committee we had extensive discussion about it. What was budgeted or estimated in 2019 versus what is actually was roughly about $600,000 additional spending. And I know that we try to project in a 5-year rolling budget how we're going to be addressing these things. I just got a hard time believing that all of a sudden, all of these items listed on the CIP are emergencies. I just don't believe it. And even though that I had made a motion to reduce some of this bonding, just for the sake that some things that were budgeted from 19 and projected into 20, I didn't see any problem with them. Some of them were just increased, and I really don't understand why they're increased. But yet, we weren't able to cut a single dime by $600,000. I find that remarkable. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. What was the vote of the, were there any changes? Dennis, you're the chair of the committee. Did your committee make any changes to these budgets being presented by?
Just planning and development and.
Board of Adjustments.
And the.
Board of Adjustments.
Board of Adjustments, yes. That was it.
The two things we already voted on.
That's it.
And the vote on the budget, the finalization. Or right along the way, we did it the same format, was usually 5-2, but it passed the way you are looking at it to come to the Finance Committee.
So the capital budgets weren't cut?
No.
Right. Anything further before we vote? All right, on the, there's a motion to approve. Why don't we do a roll call? Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
John?
Nay.
Yes, but I'll abstain from the capital portion.
No. Yes.
John?
Yes.
Yes. All right, moving on.
Okay, we already talked about highway. It's on page, I think, 10 and 11. So we can move to facilities. Is that page 12?
Yes.
Okay.
I did turn that into maintenance just before.
Would the tallest person in the room go over there and unscrew that bulb?
Huh? I'll give you a chair, Jim.
We got Chris Walton back there. Okay, sorry, page 12. For facilities, this budget here includes, we basically have three divisions. We have the Civic Center campus, which is all these buildings here, except for the PSB, which operates on its own. It's a separate thing, but it's included in. So it includes the Civic Center campus, it includes the KCDC, and it includes the Job Center, and it includes KCC. So it's all, we track all this stuff individually, and there's a lot of pages in the budget book. I think it goes from page 93 to 107. We kind of combine it all here for budgeting purposes. It's all part of the budget. And I don't want to say the pieces are interchangeable, because we do need to track them separately, because the public safety building, those expenses, we accumulate them and we bill a chunk of it back to the Kenosha Police Department and Joint Services, maybe about 50%. And then the Job Center, anything that's facilities related at the Job Center, they include that in their billing rate that they charge back to their various customers. That's maybe $700,000 or $800,000. It's all netted out here. In fact, that's why you see that fixed expense, that amount being going the opposite way from expenses, because up in personnel, contracted services, and supplies, we spend money at the Job Center, and then we charge it back, and it shows here as a credit, fixed expenses. So in total, the levy for this department is going up about $38,000, and that's, as a percentage, it's 1.02% for the levy increase. And page 12 is just the operating expenses. We don't have any headcount increases in here at all. Same amount of custodians and chiefs and reliefs that service all the buildings in the county. It's all in here, netted out by what we bill back to our various customers. I'll tell you, there's another smaller number in here for our 911 services. We spend $40,000 a year on the bills for the communication, the phone bills for the 911 center. The budget for 911 communications is $40,000 this year and $40,000 next year, so there's no change in the levy. It'll be the same. And the only other thing that's not in here, we own some buildings here downtown, which we rent out, and then we have to pay some utility expenses. We actually make a little bit of money off that. Not much, a few thousand dollars a year. It's not in here, but we charge rent, and then we have some expenses, like the lawyers who are next door. And as we bought some of these buildings, we've made some deals with people to let them live there for a little while they find another place. They pay us some rent, we absorb the expenses, and then they move out. We haven't had to go through any processes with them, as far as they've let them peaceably with no complaints and take their expenses and move on. We've had two of those occasions too. So that's pretty much what's in this facilities budget. There's a lot of moving pieces. There's 30 some, I forget the number, it's on page 2, 30, 40 people. There's a lot of things that happen here. And again, as Ray said before, what we try to do in the facilities division is there's a real emphasis on maintenance. I've been here for 8 years and I've seen the buildup. They have a system now that tracks the maintenance on the various pieces of equipment. They've gone through lean training to reduce their processes to make things more efficient. The utility expenses in here are virtually the same dollar amount that they were. It's like $1.8 million 6-7 years ago. So utility expenses haven't changed, and that's a tribute to these folks. And some of the projects we do for efficiency and just doing their jobs different. And it's really something to be proud of, I think, for taking care of it. Everything that they keep track of, and we're looking for a 1% increase in the levy on the operating side.
All right, discussion here. Yes, John.
Ray,
There's been discussion about the restrooms in here, you know, that they don't have adequate hand dryers, and yet there's no paper towel dryers, you know. Are you going to put in paper towel dispensers in here, or do you want me to vote against this budget?
Right. Wow.
We're passing the hat at the end for the paper towel dispense collection.
Get them a roll of Bounty.
I'll
bring it in.
You can just answer that.
I'll bring it tomorrow.
Do you want me to answer?
I want an answer now.
So we've looked at the cost benefit of putting in those hand dryers. Now, unfortunately, some of the hand dryers we've had to dial down because of where they're located. This one specifically.
I've heard
the
story.
Right? But if we let those things on their full turbo mode, they're very efficient, very effective, and we don't have the maintenance of paper and the mess that's caused by paper. Arguably, there's studies that go both ways as far as the germ issue because, you know, handling the door handles. Well, I won't get into it. Mike and I have had many discussions about this. At this point, we're still, let's say, strategically placing. We were at one time going a little overboard maybe with where we put them all. Mm-hmm. We're being a little bit more selective where we put those hand dryers. But there is actually a thought process. It all has to do with lean as far as doing a benefit analysis from what the maintenance factors are versus the benefits.
Well, I know there's at least three members of this committee that aren't happy. So.
Duly noted. Duly noted. We'll look into that.
Yeah, all right, very good, Jeff.
Okay, I have a question in reference to the facilities number 13 HVAC replacement. We've got $1 million for 2020, and then 500,000. What would be? Could we go say 500,000 for 2020, 500,000 for 2021, and 500,000 for 2022? Is that a possibility?
So we could. The short answer to that question is we could. The risks associated with doing that are a couple. So basically the roof needs to be replaced on the entire detention center, and the rooftop units are all at the end of their useful life as well. So the risk that we run into by spreading things out that much further is the chances that Mike's going to have to dump somewhere between, I'm going to say, $10,000 and $25,000 in a unit that goes down that now is a 23 to 25-year-old unit that we're going to replace. So when we look at it, we'd ideally like to do, I believe we originally had this as a request, to do $1.5 million and get them all done, because we really don't think that's a wise use of money to put our, we want to minimize the potential for us to have to put a significant five-figure investment into any of these rooftop units, and then have to pull the unit the next year and flush that money down the tube.
Well, doesn't that have to be $1 million? Could it be $750,000? Is there a reason it has to be $1 million? Because of the whatever the reason is, I'm just looking for an answer. That's
so, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this, the way we've got this set up now, this allows us to do a certain section of the roof so that we can get all the units in this one area, which will allow us then to do the roof in that area. But I'm not 100% sure. So that's the logic behind it, is we get them all done in this one area, then we can do the roof in that whole area, and we don't piecemeal that section. So that's the logic behind it.
Thank you.
All right, further discussion? Anyone?
Okay, well, I have another one then.
Okay.
The ceremonial courtroom, I know we have the judges here tonight. Can anyone explain to me why we're doing that, and is it a need or is it a want?
So here's, I'll back up and describe what happened this year. So basically this year, in fact, I think Frank got to give you a tour of the facility. So basically what we did this year, we took about, I think it was 4 weeks early in the year, pulled down, Judge Schrader was gracious enough to give us the courtroom so that we were able to take down, put scaffolding up, and completely analyze the damages that are up there now in that ceiling, and more importantly, determine the feasibility of taking a brief description of what exists up there. And Matt, maybe what exists up there is air conditioning was added to the building in about 1966. And what they did to do that was, although there's a crawl space of about 5 feet between the roof on this, a roof on that building and the ceiling, they decided not to mount the HVAC equipment in that area. they put it below the decorative, the ceremonial ceiling. And what they did in that process is they just basically blew through all this highly decorative, extremely expensive crown molding, leaded glass, stained glass windows, and pretty much completely obliterated all that stuff to hang this ductwork in that area, and then put a false ceiling, an acoustic ceiling similar to this below it. So that was, so our first question was, okay, can you even do anything? Is this how it has to be? So the answer to that was determined this year, no, it doesn't have to be like that. There is a way to move all that equipment up into that crawl space area and in fact restore then that original 1925 ceiling to how it was designed and constructed in 1925. What we had them do then as part of that whole process is they inventoried every anomaly or every piece of damage in that ceiling and that leaded glass. They basically, there's blueprints now that exist that show every area that's been damaged. They did a scan of it. It's incredible, the detail. So we know exactly how much damage is up there. The two pieces of information that we don't have right now, one is the processes that are going to be able to be used to correct some of these things. The biggest one being there's about a 30 foot by 15 foot stained leaded glass skylight in the center of that room that they poured about 2 inches of concrete over the top of it so that they could then drill through and mount hangers for some of the ductwork. So they did that, and the exact process that's going to be required to restore that, we know that there are ways to do it, but what specifically is going to work in this case, we don't know that. There's some very decorative plaster appliques that were part of the original ceiling as well, and there's an extremely detailed crown molding around the entire perimeter, including a quote that goes around the entire perimeter of the room from Lincoln's Lyceum address. It's incredible history to that whole thing. So bottom line, all that stuff is damaged, but the specific processes to restore that window, to restore those appliques, and to restore that crown molding, we don't know what those processes are going to be. So, and Matt, maybe you can just show it briefly. Just again, the picture is worth a thousand words. This is what it originally looked like. That's the skylight I was just describing. This is the crown molding. This is the quote from Lincoln that runs around the entire room.
I remember Judge Ritz sitting at the bench too.
So you were on the board when they did that?
No, I was in front of
that building.
That's what the seal. This is what the stained glass ceiling. It's dark and shaded because there's 2 inches of concrete above it, and then you can see kind of how the ductwork was hung there. Just gives you just kind of an overall feel for what that looks like. Go ahead and flip to the next one. Next one is the crown molding. And of course, if you need to get ductwork in, you just take a jackhammer and you blow through all of that detailed stuff, and you can see the duct. Now that's one of the main lines coming from the rooftop unit into the room. And there's the quote from Lincoln there as well. And then the last one I think shows one of the, well, a couple of the appliques that are, again, extremely detailed, but incredible artwork, and we've just got ductwork hanging from. So this just puts it in context what is up there. We've taken the inventory of all that stuff. To get back to what I was describing, the specific processes to restore each of those three things are not known. We know if we go out for bids, anytime things aren't really known, what do contractors do? They have to cover themselves. So the more information they don't have, they've got to increase their prices. If we can define the processes, or at least process options for each of those restoration areas, we can take those unknowns out of the equation so that when, if we are ever able to go out for bids, we can get the best possible bids by taking as much guesswork out of the bidding process as possible. That's the first piece. The second piece is, as you saw, these things are pretty artistic. It's not like a widget. So if we don't define what the quality standard is, what we want that to look like when it's done, if we don't do that, again, you get into I'm looking for a word that's not a swear word.
There's
a ticking match with somebody over what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. What we're asking for this money, this $250,000 would allow us to, one, establish the processes to be used so we could take that unknown out of the bidding process, thereby reducing the cost, and also establishing clear quality standards. So we basically would take those three features, three of those features in the same area in the roof, in the ceiling. We'd locate where it would be so that we could take out that one, take the ceiling out of that one section and have them actually define the processes and the quality standards for that type of work. Takes all the guesswork out of this so that when we go out for bids, those bids should be as low as possible.
I get that.
That's
get
the logic.
So that was created, this mess, so to speak, in the 1970s, right?
Mm-hmm. 66.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess my question is, why now? Could we put it off just so we're not spending the $250,000 this year? And then my understanding was there was grant money possibly available. Why can't we just, instead of us bonding for this, use the grant money? I'm not against the project.
So this is actually you're actually answering the next part of the question.
I was supposed to talk about this part, but go ahead.
Okay, I'm on a roll.
No, no.
You're on a roll. So the second piece is, by doing these things and setting a complete bid package together, those are the things that allow us to put us in the best position to get grants.
So you said we can't use the grants.
We don't have them.
Right, no.
We don't have the grants.
What I'm saying is, let's just wait, get the grants, and use it for the...
No, this is what will allow us, this will assist us in getting...
We have to spend $250,000 to try to get grants to cover a $3.5 million project that may or not need to be done.
We'll have a complete package of all the information needed, not only to ensure that we get the lowest possible bids if we go out for bid, also put us in the best position to put us in line for grant opportunities. We're talking with, there's federal dollar ones, but to me, the ones that we have the highest probability or highest, let's say, have the highest hope for are the private endowment funds. There's two in Chicago that we're talking to right now that do this kind of, they're interested in this kind of stuff. And if we show that we put together our due diligence to the level of detail we're talking about, that will raise us in whoever's knocking on their door asking for money.
Okay, can the due diligence only be done next year, not this year? Is there a reason it has to be this year? And anyway, I'm just asking. Why this year?
We've got the architect is still actually on site and is still involved in wrapping up this first phase of things. From a continuity standpoint, it would be good to just get this done. We'll have the entire package done, ready for grant applications. We've already made some grant applications, but the big private sector ones are going to be the ones that this kind of information is going to help us with.
I personally think it could wait a year. So I'm going to propose we take it out of the bonding, the $250,000.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion on the issue, Jeff?
Yeah. Again, as I stated earlier, I don't want to push something that we're going to bond for off into the future because I don't know what the interest rates will be in the future. So I'll be voting against this. I also am not convinced that I really want to spend $3.5 million on the ceiling of a courtroom. When we haggle over dollars here and there, I pray that I'm not in front of any of the judges in this room. But I'm just going to say right now that, you know, there has to be some public-private partnerships, some grants. Mm-hmm. Some, I mean, you're not going to, if I'm still sitting here, I don't know that I can support that. I do understand you needing to do the work prior to, so you can see what you're looking for to get these partnerships going and these grants going. I'm not in favor of pushing bonding out that I'm not going to eliminate. So, like the trucks for the sheriff's department. Okay, thank you.
With further discussion, Frank, did you have something?
Just to give a little bit of extra information on the continuity aspect as far as this is extremely specialized. There's probably a handful of people that really, they don't build buildings like this anymore. It just doesn't exist. And there's a core group of architects, and in fact, they enlisted some specialized guys for the interior out of Minneapolis, St. Paul that kind of specialized in this. One of the key members of that team actually got recruited because the market assessment were all as hot, but he got recruited and went to another firm. Now, there's still, you know, probably you've got five core people in that group. We lost one, you know, but I'm afraid we're if it was put off, you might lose more members of that core group that are already got their hands into this, and you'd lose some knowledge and some continuity to kind of put a bow around this with all that detailed information.
Do any of the judges want to say anything?
Gabe, you're a judge.
You know, 100 years ago, the people who came before us built. They didn't build this plain courthouse. They built a fantastic, magnificent building, and they spent extra money to do it. And in fact, this had a twin. There was another courtroom. The pictures, to me, it makes it even more attractive. That's been destroyed. That was just obliterated. This one, you could see the damage that was done. This is an opportunity to restore it. I have no skin in it because, if anything, this is an inconvenience to me, because if they do the work, I'm going to be out of my, they say 9 months, and yeah, okay. I will have to, I'll be in a very different facility for probably a year, but as I say, these people who built this had a vision that there should be some majesty attached to your, well, now what it remains is the only ceremonial courtroom, the bigger courtroom, and it impresses upon people. And when they see that quote from Abraham Lincoln up there, it's something that can teach a lesson to all of us. I'm going to get it wrong, but it's let every true patriot swear by the blood of the revolution never to violate the law of the land, nor tolerate its violation by others. And that's all the way around in bold letters, all the way around the top of the courtroom. It's irreplaceable, and this may be the last opportunity to save it. I've said enough. Thanks.
Judge Rozelle.
The only thing I would add in terms of timing, the building will turn 100 years old in approximately, depending on which date you go with, the next 4 to 5 years, either 2023 or 2024. So one of the things that may move us up higher on a grant or someone's radar, if they're thinking of partnering with us, is the fact that there is a centennial coming, and that there'll be celebrations and ability for their contributions to be noticed in a larger community.
Yeah. Did you want to say anything, Jack White?
No.
All right.
Well consent.
Oh. Zach.
Thank you. I've got a few questions. First one is on facilities three. Can you just...
Wait, point of order. Are we still on the ceremony courtroom?
Yeah.
Well, Terry, is that what you're going to
do? Motion.
Yeah, why don't we stick to the motion and we can get to the other...
Yeah. So let's stay focused.
All right. Anybody else on the issue of striking the ceremonial courtroom?
Yeah. I do. Well, I just want to say a couple of things. I've been attending all the meetings, committee meetings, every night meetings here at Finance. We've been discussing many, many things, over $270 million roughly. So far, we're very, very, whatever word you want to use, I believe we have the budget at $20,000. Many things were brought up to cut it, including that keep on hearing the sheriff's drops, everybody's against it, but at the end, everybody, almost everybody,
thank
voted
you
for that. Okay, so I cannot understand that. Now, one of the things that I want to remind, when the district attorney, Mike Gravely, came over and made his presentation, he brought us the fact that there is a program, which I'm not really sure, maybe some of the judges can help me on that, and next year, we're in line to have 52 different cases for
TPRs. Termination parental rights of children in foster care.
Thank you. Which the judges that got together, it's my understanding, they decided to put in extra work, extra time to do it, which that will save the county roughly about $250,000-$300,000. So I think we owe to them, not just to the judges, to everybody in Fellowship House to do that and get it done. So, those are my two cents.
Dan.
Hey, Terry. Thank you.
I guess, Ray, what I want to understand is I understand the wants and needs issue. I understand the A versus to get the B. What nobody said that I find that informational to me is, if we do this 250 and you package everything in to go out to get a grant or look at donors or this, that, or the other, what percentage are we talking about that somebody's going to donate? I mean, do we have an idea? I mean, like, it's 3.5 million. We think we can get 2 million. We think we can get 28,000. I mean, I think this is really important that this committee and this county board understand this.
So internally, we're targeting, we haven't picked a number, but it's going to be 7 figures. We have to get 7 figures to the table from outside sources, okay, in my mind, to make this viable.
I think that's important for everybody to know. I mean, yeah. If
$25,000 isn't going to do it.
I understand that. But, you know, if you say, okay, we're looking to get outside donors, and it's a $3.5 million project, and all you're bringing to the table is $250,000, and the county's got to pay $3.25 million, I mean, this is a big deal.
Understood.
It's not a small project, we understand.
We're targeting, and some of the donors that we're potential donors that we're talking to have those kinds of resources. There's federal grants we're going to apply for too. There's a couple that are pretty significant, but you're in such a big fishbowl that you're swimming with to try to get them. Those are small percentages, but there are some private entities within a 50-mile radius of where we're sitting that do these kinds of things, and we're engaged with them. So.
Well, and that would be my other, you know, my next question to that. We go forward with this 250, and let's say we don't get all this grant funding we're thinking we're going to get. Now, who's going to be on the hook for that? You know,
well,
what I mean? So, you know what I mean? So are we going to do all this legwork and then just put it on the back burner?
So we still will end up with a very valuable package of information that won't change. That information,
sure,
isn't going to get modified. So we've got it. So if we continue to push for additional funding, it's not going to become invalid, the information,
right,
we're going to create.
All right, further discussion? Are you ready to vote? All right, the proposal is to delete the $250,000. We'll have a roll call.
No.
No.
Aye.
No.
Yes.
No.
No, it fails. All right, moving on. Any other discussion on this budget? Yes, Zach.
Thanks, and I do apologize for the mix-up before. But anyways, facilities number 3, $30,000. What's left on the third floor to be completed?
I believe the pieces that are left of that are just to do some carpeting in the hall, some painting, I'm going to say finish work, so tiling, flooring, finish type work that's just in the back hallway, the areas that haven't been touched yet up there,
okay,
outside of the main room.
And so nothing specifically in the county board chambers. It would be the area behind it and then the lobby in front.
Right, yeah, there isn't anything, I don't think, specific in the chambers themselves.
It's just this kind of transitioning to what we've done.
I thought there were chairs in there for us.
No.
Not this year.
Not this year.
County board chairman said no.
No
chairs for you.
Good thing you're fired after right this year.
Hardwood chairs.
All right, any other discussion here? Yes.
I got you. Facilities 11. What do we have currently? You want about another $250,000 for, my understanding, is purchasing property down here for the campus. I mean, do we have any funds remaining this year?
So those funds will be pretty well tapped out this year by the time we end up making up the last acquisitions that are in process right now. What we talked about at Public Works when this same question came up there is that this money, the funds that we put in the Civic Center, have been used to acquire property, demo property, basically prepare things down here to kind of set the table for whatever makes sense in the future. What we have learned is when we're able to purchase property, when somebody approaches us and says, hey, we got this thing, we're going to retire, we'd like to get rid of this building, are you guys interested as a county? That cost, when we're able to negotiate that type of a transaction, is typically one-third to one-half if we don't have to go. We get to a point where we need the property, like we're working on the properties right now, the four properties to put up the public safety communications tower across the street. Those four properties, because we have to go through a formal jurisdictional offer process, we haven't had to invoke eminent domain at this point, but it's still a very structured legal process. Typically, those costs are going to be 2 to 3 times what a friendly transaction cost is.
Right.
So by having the money here available, if somebody comes up to us and says, hey, we would like to sell the building, we need to take advantage of that when those opportunities are there and have money.
Okay. And then next one, capital projects. One, the energy efficient projects. What are we seeing on return for $150,000 investment year after year?
We have the paybacks are a couple of years. It's mostly lighting projects. We'll spend amounts of money that'll have a 10-year life, and the energy savings pays us back within a few years.
Okay.
That's been a general.
So for the
we've been very successful in replacing anything that's energy inefficient, old lighting, and use this account.
But the returns are exceeding what we're borrowing.
Yeah, the paybacks are very quick.
Okay. And but the amounts exceed what we originally spent, correct? Like by doing these energy efficient projects, are we going to regain our $150,000 that we have bond?
Well, one of the places it shows, I don't know if you were here when we were talking about utilities before, but our utility bills are basically flat for the last 6-7 years, and we've actually added space and costs have gone up.
Yeah.
So that's one way that those things pay back is in lower utility bills.
Our utility costs have dropped, and those utility costs are always paid with levy dollars. So anytime we can make an investment that saves on utilities, it's levy dollars that are saved.
Okay, and then if I could just have some clarification for Project 2, the law enforcement enhancements. I was under the impression by another supervisor that, so this is for the storage area, the evidence storage, that at one point this year, the estimate was $1.2 million to finish the project.
Right, so here's, because that got, I'll let you jump in too, so it got kind of, this was under discussion at Public Works and got a little confusing too. So basically the original law enforcement enhancements, that was a package of four things. It was the storage building at the detention center that went up. It was the build out of the second floor of the safety building and the movement of the medical examiner into the safety building, as well as the renovation of the fleet maintenance building, those items. It was also put in the shooting range. Those are considered one project. So the third item was the shooting range, which was done last year. And then the last piece of that package of four things is the evidence area. So some of these things, most of these things actually all came in under budget. I think all of these projects, the shooting range, maybe Frank was at?
Yeah, shooting range was more expensive.
Was more expensive, but the other two came in under. So this is the remaining dollars that are, what's shown here, I'll let Jim talk about that. That's what's actually showing what's gonna be bonded. Four projects, there was an original dollar amount of for those four projects of $12 million and change. And the 1.2 that you heard, that is our estimated cost to do the renovation of the evidence area. That hasn't changed. These numbers that are shown here, I believe, Jim, are bonding, showing bonding. This isn't showing the cost for that project. So all four of the projects are going to come in under the total $12 million and change that was originally budgeted for all four of those projects. That hasn't changed. That's remained exactly the same. And this is just reflecting, I believe, the bonding, the timing of the bonding for that original package of those four projects. Is that accurate?
That's exactly accurate.
Wow.
All right, under discussion
here? Yes. I just want to go back to these HVAC units. I'm just looking for a little more clarification. You go 500, 500, 500, and maybe Mike can come up here because I'm a little confused, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. So we're bonding $1 million. Mike, is this for a particular part of the roof? Plus, I mean, I guess I would like to understand some type of schedule. Are we looking to replace 2 units this year, 5 units? How many units are up there?
15.
Okay.
And that's why you see the 1,500,000.
So
you can do it 750,
but you still save more than the first year. Okay. So you can split out 750 potentially, but you do think it's going to be a cost? It'll cost more?
Yeah. Then we got to get right on the road.
And why do you say that? And if I can ask,
just because of control, installing controls with it, upgrading it at the same time.
And if we do those across the board with all 15 units as opposed to just the 8 or 7 or 8
Right, because they're on site basically, right? Don't have to pay the fee to get them back. Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right, further discussion, Supervisor Nudo.
Yeah, can I add one thing on that? Because you say we do portion of that for $1 million and $500,000 will be for next year, because you want to do two separate. How about if I do $500,000 this year, so we'll do the smaller part this year, and then do the next part, the other part next year? Yeah.
When Ray talked about it earlier.
Can you speak up and stand up?
Or my question.
Yeah, when Ray spoke earlier about it, if we would do just a portion now as opposed to the other portion later, it does cost more. Right now, we probably spend repairing the roof every year about $20,000 a year. If we have HVAC problems, it could cost up to $40,000 a year. We're kind of hitting that now. So we're choosing to do the rooftop units now and the roof later.
It's all about the entry of money.
How old are those rooftops?
97.
Yeah, they're the original two buildings.
Okay, and that usually they're like what, 20 to 30 years?
15 to 20 years.
So, I mean, should we went, then my other question is, if we already went over when we do it before, or at this point, since we're this year, we're really in trouble with the budget and everything, why don't we postpone it for a year and we do $1 million next year and $500 the following year? So, the way you said it, it's probably going to cost us, what, $20,000? You never know. Again, a brand new can go out. But it's not really going to make it affect that much by doing zero this year, $1 million next year, and $500 the following year.
You potentially every year by doing that, you can have the rooftop unit go bad and the roof leaks go bad. $60,000 each year.
Sure, so potentially it's ever.
You're saying that. That's the idea.
That's not for sure. Whether we do it or not, that's not for sure.
Not for sure.
Okay, it's, so either way, that could happen.
Our history in the last 2 years is showing that more and
more. That could happen either way. So maybe that's what we should do. Zero this year, $1 million next year, $500 the following year. That would be my idea.
All right, further discussion? John.
Well, since Supervisor Nudo can't make the motion, I'll make the motion to take the HVAC replacement out of the KCDC for $1 million.
To remove it?
Remove it.
All right. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right. Discussion? All right. Seeing none. Frank, did I miss you? Or
yes, I think Mike touched on it, but just to kind of elaborate on it, the roofs also need to be replaced. We're putting money into patching leaks, casing leaks, and every year you go, it's almost a definite, just the leaks get worse, you're spending more money, and then we're going to rip this roof off in a couple of years. But by coordinating between my guy and Ray, talking to everybody out there, you never want to put a new roof on, and then the next year or year after start replacing all these HVAC units, and 20 guys trampling all over, dropping their tools, and then you got a brand new roof, which they might not make a hole there right then, but they drop a tool on it, and I've seen it personally out there, where it goes halfway through the roof, and then in 5 or 10 years, it causes a leak. And then what we're trying to do is replace the HVAC units, then put the new roof after those HVAC units on, so nobody's trampling over that new roof, and then the other part of the roof, put the HVAC units on there, and then after that, put the new roof on. So that's just kind of part of the philosophy. So if we push it off, it not only do you have the risk of an HVAC unit you're putting money into that you got to pull out, but also the roof having more leaks and putting more money into a roof that you tear out.
I think I've missed something. Please hang in there with me. It takes me a while to understand what's going on, okay? So this year we're replacing some of the HVAC, and also we're replacing the roof there. I don't see any place that we're replacing the roof.
No, this.
We're not replacing any roof, right?
No, we're getting prepared by dealing with the HVAC.
Okay, so that goes against what Frank just said now, that it's worried that if we replace the roof and then we'll put the HVAC or we do HVAC first and then the roof is going to be, we're postponing the HVAC. The roof is not in that picture
right now. What he's saying is by delaying the HVAC repairs, or replacement, I should say, will increase not only the HVAC potential for HVAC repairs, but it'll also increase the roof repairs, and it will delay us replacing that roof because we can't replace the roof until the HVAC stuff's been replaced. Mm-hmm. And so now we've sunk even more money potentially into stuff that's just money down the tubes.
Okay, right? That's so possible. That's the However, the roof is not being installed this year. When are you planning on installing the new roof?
Right, 2022 and 2023.
Right, as soon as we get the roof done, it's
2023.
Done.
Why can't it be put it in 2022 and do the rest of the HVAC in 2022, you know, instead of 21, and then the following year or even the same year?
The roof is in 2022.
I'm sorry?
The roof is in 2022.
Okay, so we'll still be done by that because we're just delaying 1 year. In 2022, we'll finish the HVAC and we'll do the roof in 1 year. Right after that. I mean, I can do it in 1 year. So it's not really going to postpone anything. It will be exactly the same thing. Now, if we want to go around and around, I guess we can find excuses for anything. If we don't want to do it, let's just come out and say, we don't want to do it. But not that it cannot be done. The same thing going back when we said it on the golf, it's not self-sufficient. We're subsidizing the golf. So at least let's call it the way it is.
Dennis.
There was a lot of discussion at facilities and committee when we went through the budget. And I've been in on some of the discussions on these, and also I've been reporting for years about our roofing plan for Kenosha County that took into account 300 some odd roofs that we own. The number's probably deflated. I think it's more than 300. That being said, this roof is on the list. This isn't a game that we play. The roof at the highway department was the worst that we had. We have a list that goes down. So that roof is on the list for that year. You can't really screw around. Leave the insulation out of your house. Save you money that year, right? Your heating bills the next 40 years will kill you. This roof plan is a serious thing. So you do not want to have air conditioning guys up there after you replace the roof. We don't know if this thing is going to go. We're spending levy dollars to do our repair. You don't bond the 20 grand that you spend to send some guys up there when you have leaks. Right now, people are trying to find that big $1 million hit on this budget. And I heard it said tonight, we're in trouble on this budget. I don't see where we're in trouble on this budget. What we're bonding for are needed projects, and we're getting the money that most communities would die for the rates we're getting the money for. This is as fiscally sound as you could get. So don't beat around and try to find the big kill here, the $1 million hit. We just gave you, coming from this department, $150,000 tonight that no one knew about, that we're sure of. That's levy dollar. So, don't try to save the taxpayers' money when you're going to kill them if you wait 3 years and we get hit by hard repairs on this and we're paying levy dollars for those repairs. Again, this isn't just made up. This is science. We've had studies done on these roofs, and this has got to be done. So, say let's put it off a year. Everybody feels great then? I wouldn't.
All right, we ready to vote? All right, the motion is to delete this. Let's start with Jeff.
No.
Oh.
Yes.
No.
Okay. Yes.
No.
No. All right, it fails. Anything else? All right, anything else that you want to present?
For facilities, no.
All right, is there a motion to approve?
Is it sure?
Yes.
Just to kind of clarify a comment that you made, there is a plan in place, and it is well thought out. But I wonder why $2.5 million was pulled forward from the estimates of last year into this year. So what I mean is, rather than spending it in 2021 or 22, it's been accelerated. Either our plans, the strategic and detailed, they aren't very good, and we need to reevaluate them, or there's just some additional wants and not necessarily all the needs in the CIP for facilities budget. It's a significant amount of money to increase $2.5 million over what was projected from last year. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Nothing further. Let's take that vote. Is there anything else here?
No, sir.
All right. Is there a motion to approve generally the budget here presented this evening by Public Works?
Are you doing facilities or just the whole
facilities,
right? Yes.
Is there a motion on the floor?
No.
Move the facilities budget.
There's a second.
Second.
Further discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Passes.
Nay.
Anything? One dissent.
One dissent. The only I forgot something. It's on page 14. It is our dog parks and mountain bike trails. There's no levy, but I didn't mention it. So
you just mentioned it.
Did point I of order. He doesn't get do overs.
All right.
That was part of the parks budget.
Yeah. Okay. So
I just wanted to make sure.
Anything further than you're presenting?
It's 710 somewhere.
No.
All right. Thank you very much.
It's somewhere out west.
Well, that's not a budget. So
is
that's
time to.
I just want to touch base quickly on. There were three items that are going to. I think you guys got the budget resolution, the draft budget resolution last night. There's three items in there that are public works related. I'm not going to be able to be here tomorrow night when you work on the budget resolutions. I got to be at the town of Randall for a presentation on an IGA, kind of an overview of things. I just wanted, there was three things. One has to do with the naming of Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park, Katy Park. That was mentioned in the exec's budget address. That's something that we're requesting and our committee voted on to recommend to include in the resolution. That's the one thing. The second thing is acceptance of donated land for a new park along the Fox River. And there's information I'm going to leave with Barna that he can pass out tomorrow for that. It's pretty straightforward. It's actually part of the Fox River Water Trail currently, but this would formally make it a Kenosha County Park if the state so decides to donate that property to us. And the third thing is, it's not an IGA, but it's basically authorizing and approving us to continue negotiations with the town of Randall and the village of Twin Lakes on an IGA that would address jurisdictional transfer after the County Highway F project is done, jurisdictionally transferring that old section of road to the chunks of it to each of the municipalities and addressing some other property issues out there, cleans up a bunch of loose ends. So this won't ask for the approval of the IGA. It's just basically authorizing us to continue negotiations and making the board formally aware. Our committee's been aware of that. We've been talking with both communities for the past 9 months. We wanted the whole board to be aware of it. And that when that IGA is hopefully ultimately worked out, that it comes back to the board for a full approval. It'll be 2020 for sure. So I just wanted to mention those three things.
That's very good. Thank you.
That was a yes.
All right, we're moving on then to the human services budget.
Mr. Today. Chairman, I request a 5-minute recess and stretch my legs.
So good. Yeah, I knew you'd come across, right. Jeff.
That's a good question.
Yeah.